This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. Joining us now is the host of CBS's Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan. On the attack on the nuclear power plant, I watched that and I said, what the heck? I mean, what are the rules here? And did Russia know that it was just hitting a training building, or were they trying to actually destroy the plant and create a nuclear catastrophe?
The United States is accusing Russia of a war crime and being deliberate in their targeting and shelling of this nuclear power plant. What we know is that the radiation levels appear steady, according to the UN's nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, and according to the United States Energy Secretary. So it's being monitored, but obviously of high concern here that Russia is willing to take a risk like that in order to perhaps make the point that they're willing to go further than Western allies certainly are, and definitely willing to take extreme measures to have the upper hand on the battlefield. As the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. said to me last Sunday on Face the Nation, quote, nothing's off the table with this guy, when I asked her about even the use of chemical or biological weapons.
Of course, the video coming out of Ukraine is heart-wrenching. We're seeing families separated. We're seeing mothers and children having to hide in bunkers, having trouble getting food, worried that they will be shot if they leave their homes. And, I mean, unquestionably, the pressure seems to be building for us to do something more. What is the sentiment on Capitol Hill about what we've done and whether or not it's enough?
There's no appetite for use of military force. There had been calls by many Republicans in particular for establishment of a no-fly zone that would prevent Russian planes from being able to take off, or even speculation that bombing of that 40-mile-long Russian convoy is something the United States or NATO allies could do. But NATO Secretary General just stood at the podium in Brussels this morning and said that there is no appetite for sending NATO forces into Ukrainian airspace at all, or in NATO troops at all. So bottom line is no country is coming to the defense of Ukraine, full stop.
Mm-hmm. And Russia knows this. And so since they have the bigger army, we will ultimately see the Russian occupation of Ukraine. I don't see any other outcome.
That has been the projection by U.S. intelligence and military officials for months, that this was almost an inevitable outcome here, particularly when you have someone who is very plain spoken in his intent for Ukraine and has been willing to go to further, use extreme measures to accomplish it. When only one side is willing to use force, that bully does typically get the upper hand. What the U.S. would say and has argued to lawmakers as recently as that week is that over the long term, they believe that the democracy that Ukraine had founded will ultimately prevail. But they're talking about over 10, 15, 20 years.
So it sounds to me like every Ukrainian city has a decision to make. Do we resist and simply put off the inevitable outcome at the cost of destruction of more apartment blocks? Or do we just open the country and say, we tried our best, come on in?
Well, in some ways, it's a false choice between capitulation and revolt, because what we know from the U.S. ambassador to the OSCE in plain remarks he laid out yesterday was, even if Ukrainian forces were to capitulate and their diplomats were to say, we'll stand down if you will not harm civilians further, the intent, according to U.S. intelligence, is for Russia to round up key Ukrainian leaders and other key Ukrainian figures and put them in camps, that they have lists of names of individuals that they want to sideline. So you are seeing the intent and planning here for further human rights abuses, even after Russia takes control in an occupation, that this goes further than just dominating the territory, that it goes into trying to dominate and repress the society. Ukraine's foreign minister this morning in London is accusing Russian soldiers of carrying out rape against Ukrainian women as well.
But that would be the negotiation, right? In exchange for us capitulating, you will agree not to do that if you can trust them. I mean, what a choice to make.
It didn't work well in 1938.
No.
And that is what the Ukrainians would argue, is that this is, as President Zelensky has argued, appeasement, that the person you are negotiating with, and they draw a direct line between Vladimir Putin and Adolf Hitler. That's the kind of characterization he has there, that you're not negotiating with someone who will stop at, oh, okay, I'll stop fighting because I'm going to all of a sudden start abiding by the rules of international law and the Geneva Conventions, that there is intention to set up camps and round people up, that indicates Russian occupation will also be brutal.
We can also pretty much guarantee that there will be Russian troops now a lot closer to NATO, correct?
That is something that we are watching closely here because, yes, there are reports now, and certainly if you listen to the language from the NATO Secretary General this morning, they are talking about the threat to Europe writ large and really leaning into the idea that Russian forces may move further west. There was a school of thought thinking that maybe Russian forces would stop at the Dnieper River, which sort of bisects the country, and not move into the western part where there is more staunch Ukrainian resistance. Now there's speculation that might actually be something Putin is willing to do. So we will see, though, because this is a dynamic situation, and we're seeing the Russian military not move as swiftly as initially projected.
The only way out then, the only outcome that would be positive from our point of view would be some kind of popular Russian revolt. But, I mean, they've already started cracking down on dissent. They're taking TV and radio stations off the air, so yeah. The chances of that seem pretty slim.
That's the challenge when you're dealing with an authoritarian system. And the United States has said there's already about 7,000 Russians who've been rounded up for dissent and protest in the past week. So that doesn't indicate that this is a kind of society where you have a leader who has to respond to the will of the people, nor does it suggest that the people around him are willing to, in that very closed circle of advisors, stand up to the president and tell him, sir, you've gone too far. I mean, you have some pretty extreme rhetoric. The Republican senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, called for the assassination of Vladimir Putin by his cohorts. I mean, this is just the set of sort of bad options at this point. And we can certainly debate how we got here. But for 20 years of Vladimir Putin's power, he has consistently backed war criminals. He has gone to extremes, and the world has not stopped him to date.
Margaret Brennan, host of CBS's Face the Nation. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you.
In the nation's northwest corner is Washington.
And on Fridays, our resident historian Felix Bunnell joins us for All Over the Map, his quick look at the stories behind local places and things. And this week, how another of Washington's lesser-known border communities is weathering the pandemic, the town of Northport.
Morning, Dave. Yeah, Northport's in northeastern Washington, 35 miles north of Colville, which is where the nearest grocery store is, by the way, right along the Columbia, about 10 miles south of the Canadian border. This place was once the most populous town in Stevens County, with a huge copper smelter, railroad shops, all kinds of businesses. Population peaked around 1920 with about 1,000 people. Nowadays, down to about 300. I spoke with Clifford Ward. He's a librarian at the Northport Library. It's in a little house right there on Center Street. He told me Northport was founded by Daniel C. Corbin as part of the Spokane Falls and Northern Railway, which connected Spokane to Canada.
Prior to the railroad being built in the 1890s, it was just steamboats that would come up, and they could only go as far as the Little Dalles, which is about 8-10 miles south downriver of town, where the river narrows down into a real rocky and steep place, and they had a steamboat on the other side, on the upriver side, which would go clear up into, way up into Revelstoke, B.C.
Yeah, and these aren't the big dalles down by the Dalles Organ. These are the little dalles.
Little dalles.
Yeah, I know. Northport isn't actually on the border, but there's two nearby crossings at what are now pretty much ghost towns, other than the crossing, of course. One is north of Northport on Highway 25 called Frontier, Washington. The other's over at a place called Boundary, which is named after the boundary, of course. Clifford Ward says when you do cross into Canada, you find two very different towns just north of the border, Rossland and Trail.
Rossland is the, kind of a hip ski town with a lot of outdoor people that, do a lot of skiing and mountain biking and that kind of stuff. And then Trail is more of an industrial town. It's got the big smelter there.
Yeah, they still have a big lead and zinc smelter there in Trail, BC. Now, before the pandemic, Northport did steady tourism business with Canadians coming down to eat and drink year-round. That Red Mountain Ski Resort is right there about 20 minutes from Northport. Clifford Ward, he's a librarian, but he's also a musician. Before the pandemic, he had a steady gig playing during the dinner hours at one of the two taverns in town. Northport has suffered during the pandemic, but things are beginning to look up. The two places to eat there are Rivertown Grill and Cook's Tavern. Clifford Ward says Rivertown has a larger menu. It's been a while since he's been there, but he is partial to their turkey melt. That's my big finish right there. Can I have a sting? Turkey melt. I'll try it again. To their turkey melt.
Ta-da. Okay. I wish I'd been more prepared for that.
I could have done something real nice for you there, but
I've never been there in person, but I highly recommend everyone should get in the car and drive to Northport immediately.
How many miles away is that for the turkey melt?
Oh, it's like probably 250 miles, 300
250
miles.
250 miles. Yeah. Well,
it's worth
it,
though.
The turkey melt you drive 250 miles for. That's their motto. All of Felix's features are at MyNorthwest.com. Thanks, Felix.
Thanks, Dave.
This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. There is a software company called Clearview AI, which has been hoovering up photos of basically everybody. I mean, we're all probably in it, and they are selling facial recognition services. Drew Harwell writes about this in the Washington Post. Why is this company suddenly in trouble, Drew?
Well, they're in trouble because they're pitching something to investors that they have never really pitched before. For a long time, they have been saying they are a patriotic company that works with the federal government and with police across the U.S. to allow investigators to find the bad guys, right? Put in surveillance photos, find a suspect out of a big database. And that's been okay with some people. But now the company is sort of saying, actually, we want to branch out. We want to analyze the faces of gig workers like Uber drivers. We want to work in retail stores, potentially looking at surveillance footage in those stores for that retail environment. And a lot of privacy advocates who were already a little unsettled that police were using this database are now questioning if it's going too far and if we're going to be watching a lot more places than we ever expected.
And apparently the company is not getting permission from Facebook or Instagram or any of the social media sites where the pictures are being scraped from. However, hiding behind the First Amendment. Tell me more about that argument and if it could win.
Yeah, so their argument is that, hey, all we're doing is scraping or, you know, automatically taking photos from the public internet, right? People already posted their photos onto Facebook. So what's to really stop us from downloading those photos and adding them to our database? It's a bizarre argument. It's one they're making in court right now because they're being sued all around the world. And, you know, their pledge that this is all just sort of a free speech issue is not really finding a lot of takers from judges who feel like what they're doing is, in effect, taking our own personal biometric, you know, facial data and adding them into this commercial product for uses that, you know, we never really signed off for or even really knew about in advance. So I'm curious whether that legal argument is really going to survive.
I was thinking of, okay, what would I be okay with since the cat's out of the bag? And the only legitimate reason I can come up with to use a database of billions of pictures is if you have a missing person. If my child was missing, I would want Clearview to access every single photo I've posted of them mm-hmm. and access the cameras on the streets until they find my child. I could sign off on that.
Yeah. And, you know, Clearview makes that argument, right? They say, hey, we work with the police. We find missing people. We chase down human traffickers and child predators. We, you know, in their argument, they are the good guys. And all of this scraping is, in their argument, to a higher purpose, right? And, you know, you're going to find a lot of people who agree with that. And with facial recognition, it's such an interesting thing because as with a lot of surveillance technologies, people say, well, if you don't have anything to worry about, then what's the big problem? I think the flip side of that argument is that most of the faces of people going into this big database did nothing wrong, right? These are people who have not been charged with crimes, are not involved in any of these cases. And yet we are helping train the algorithm. We are being put into this database where, you know, let us not forget, these systems are not perfect, right? We have seen inaccuracies be an issue. We've seen people get falsely arrested and accused because the surveillance footage was so grainy that it mistakenly identified them as the wrong person. So again, even if you're totally innocent, you could be still in this database and you could still be pinged with a crime.
And if that were to happen, isn't that a legitimate cause of action against the company which hoovered up your picture without your consent? And wouldn't the number of lawsuits pretty much dry up investment in that company?
You know, that's a great question. And that is a sector of the legal debate here that has not really been explored. What are these companies' liabilities for providing a tool that is going to be imperfect? And, you know, even if it's right 99% of the time, in a country of 300 million people, that's still a lot of people who could be, you know, falsely accused. Clearview and other facial recognition companies count, you know, the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, as their clients. You know, investigators for these, you know, law enforcement agencies use facial recognition all the time. They used it not just in the January 6th prosecution of rioters at the Capitol, but they use it in crimes day in and day out to find people who were caught on surveillance footage potentially committing crime, or to find witnesses who were caught on camera. And I'll also say it's not just the kind of usual suspects of the FBI and the ones who are doing the investigation, but there are a lot of federal agencies who are saying we want to expand facial recognition, either, you know, to let our workers in the door by doing you know, face scans to unlock computers, unlock doors, but also kind of lower level investigations from people like, you know, fish and wildlife agencies trying to find poachers and people breaking the law. It's just a wild world out there. And, you know, the federal government has shown more interest in expanding this unregulated technology than really pulling back so far.
Drew Harwell's piece is headlined, Facial Recognition Firm Clearview AI Tells Investors It's Seeking Massive Expansion. Drew, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You need a rice sock for your neck, Dave? That whiplash from C-SPAN to Fox News must be rough.
It was. I'm in counseling for it now.
Your daily dose of kindness, sponsored by Heritage Homecraft. At a Ukrainian refugee camp in Romania, a little girl named Arina was turning 7 years old. The camp leaves a lot to be desired. It's on a dirt road, tends to be made up of blue tarps. It's cold. But Arina had reason to smile.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Arina. Happy birthday to you.
Upon hearing the little girl was having a birthday, volunteers at the refugee camp quickly scraped together a birthday cake, a fancy birthday hat, some balloons, and then they gathered around the little girl to sing her happy birthday. She even got to blow out birthday candles.
Bravo!
And I know you can't see the video, but believe me when I say the smile this brought to her face made the dismal camp around her disappear. She was absolutely beaming, and that, my friends, is a little slice of humanity.
7:47, and now direct from the G. and Ursula Show, weekdays 9 to noon here on Cairo Radio. Here is G. Scott.
Can you not be attracted to your significant other for a period of time, Dave Ross?
Can you not be attracted to your significant?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes, like say for an example, right now I've grown the beard out, and you grew the beard out, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how your wife liked your beard.
She insists on it.
So
Patty's my girl.
So let's say so she insists on the beard. Yeah. So let's say Dave Ross shaves the beard.
Yes.
And she's like, ooh, why did you shave the beard? So until you grow the beard back, is there a period of time where your significant other is just not attracted to you?
Yes.
I can't imagine that would be the case with me, because I think I'm pretty much attractive no matter what I
look
like.
Well, let me flip it on you. Lillian, right? Your fiance.
Yeah.
If she went and got a pixie haircut, how would you feel about that?
Babe, why'd you do that? And then she'd say, you don't like it? And then I'd say, well, yeah. But, you know, you can't say it all the way.
Right.
Like, babe, how do I look in these jeans?
No, well, I tell my husband when he shaves his beard, I won't look at him. I'm like, nope, you get that right back on your face, mister.
So you're not attracted to him for that time?
Period. I'm attracted to him in other ways, but as far as his physical face, it is hard to look at him without a beard.
Wow! Okay, let's get to the topic.
What? Wow. He knows this. I love Chris.
Is Chris going to find out about this conversation?
Absolutely. And I love the way he looks more. He's probably dropping off June at daycare right now listening to me. He knows I love the beard. You know where this came from, Dave?
No.
G walked in, and I just love it. He said, I'm going to the barbershop. I said, do they take care of your beard, too? Yeah. I said, I think your face was made for a beard. It's looking good. Yours,
oh,
you, too?
Oh, so you were going to shave the beard?
No, 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 I wasn't. No, no, but no. She was just saying that
I was complimenting
my face was... She basically was saying, gee, you're not good looking at all, but you're not even good... You're definitely not good looking without the beard. And so I was like, oh, thanks, Colleen. I like your glasses.
I'm saying the beard suits you. Yeah.
Okay. We're sorry. We just brought this conversation off the air on the air.
I think this is far more important than what we were going to talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, what were we going to talk about?
The NFL Combine.
But I love your confidence, Dave, that Patty will love you no matter what.
Well, I mean, you know, what choice does she have? we're living together.
I think perhaps more choices than you're aware of, but let's not get into that.
Dave, I got to tell you, I do love the beard on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does look good. I actually like the way it is right now.
Mm, yes, thank
now,
you.
Now, when it gets all the way over and you were in your little garage and I mean
when it was down to like his belly button.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this.
You're probably not, but go ahead.
I felt like before I was watching TV and I was the story about the Unabomber and how he looked.
Yeah, the Ted Kaczynski. I was rocking the Ted Kaczynski.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But this right here, you look good right
sharp.
Here.
Sharp.
Like you could be in GQ magazine. You
Professor
know what I mean?
Really?
Like, then you take your voice, got Sean Connery vibes.
Yeah.
Really?
You know what I mean? And people love your voice.
And that's why Dave's so confident. There's just so much for Patty to love.
Mm-hmm. That must be it.
She could just close her eyes and listen to him if he shaves.
I think you've nailed why I stay away from TV, because the voice is a lot more attractive than the rest.
No, that's not true. But Dave, you know what? Since I'm allowed to bring up what the topics we're talking about, I want to bring up something else here on your show.
Okay, go ahead.
This is wild.
So, yeah, this is wild. Yesterday, I was telling Colleen, I'm like, man, so sometimes you'll be telling a story to Dave Ross, right? Mm-hmm. And you're getting animated. I'm telling a story. And Dave, you're like a poker player, man. Mm-hmm, you just sit there. You don't really get too excited.
That's right.
How are you able to contain your emotions?
It's a fencing match for him.
How do you do that?
Because I'm trying to figure out what's next on the schedule.
He's thinking about his next move on the clock.
Yeah.
No.
I'm thinking, am I going to be late for traffic?
You know, having anchored alongside you for 8 years, I feel you know that you have won the conversation when the other person is getting highly emotional and you can stay calm. Because all you have to do is ask one pointed question and you get them off track. And then you go in for the kill.
But my goal is not to get somebody off track. My goal is just to find out what they're saying.
I know.
That's all.
You're strategic, is what I'm saying.
Dave, when you and I are on time, you get excited. I've seen you a couple times these last couple of days.
Oh, hitting the CBS post is an art form for Dave. When you hear him say, it's 7 o'clock, like, nothing excites the man more.
Fist pumping everything.
But you see, I thought this segment was about G.
Well,
we love talking
it has
about
been,
Ross.
But look, a lot of people listening right now, I think, G always is talking. Mm-hmm. Dave so much, when we can kind of give behind the scenes about one of the greatest men to walk the planet and Dave Ross, people love that.
But you see, I did a talk show for 25 years, so I figure they've heard enough of me talking about what I think. They would rather hear what you think now.
Yeah, okay, well, I think that coming into the studio during this time on this news show, number one, I kind of cringe because I know James is probably mad that we didn't hit any of his top talking points.
He just shrugged. You're okay.
We'll talk to you about that as you leave.
Right. And two, I just like coming in because you guys are so professional around here. And it starts with you, Dave Ross. It's the culture, right? It's about the culture that you start. It's kind of like Pete Carroll and the culture that he's established with the Seattle Seahawks.
That's who I'm exactly like as Pete Carroll. I'm glad you finally noticed. It's taken a while, but yes.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can tell the spotlight on Dave has made him uncomfortable.
Blue 42. Pike.
Dave, have you ever thrown a football?
I have thrown a football. Badly, but yes, I have thrown a football.
How about a baseball?
He threw the first pitch.
Wait a second. Now.
Go ahead.
Now I'm upset because I have thrown a baseball, and you should know that. I was coached by the best, Chris Sullivan, and my son-in-law's dad.
Really?
And I not only threw from the pitcher's mound, but it actually made it across the plate to the catcher. And yes, it was my rainbow ball, but it was a strike.
So let me get this straight.
Yes.
I've been coming in here for almost 2 years.
And you had no idea?
Well, no, I didn't have an idea.
Oh.
But I just figured something out.
Yeah.
I just said that I tell stories, I get animated, and Dave's always just reserved.
Yeah.
I just bring up baseball and throwing a baseball.
It's a very proud
and you
moment.
Get animated.
Because I know something about that. There you are. Look it up. Google it on the internet.
Talk about women's YouTube issues or Black Lives Matter issues, and he's like, tell me more, G. Mm-hmm. Colleen is our chief feminist officer.
Wait, and it's on the internet right now.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is. G. Scott joins us at 9 o'clock with Ursula.
I guess we'll talk about the NFL Combine.
We're late. We're so
late. Some other time. Seattle's Morning News. Good morning. I'm Colleen O'Brien along with Dave Ross and Chris Sullivan. We have special guests in the studio with us, the favorite girls of the region around this time, the Girl Scouts, because they're selling cookies and there's a new cookie this year. So we're going to talk all about those new cookies and also what the Girl Scouts program is doing to support girls in our region. So we want to welcome Sophie, Allie, Margot, and Vanessa. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Let's start off by talking about these new cookies. What's the name? What does it taste like?
The new cookie is called Adventurefuls. It has like fudge in it, and it's really good.
Better than the Thin Mint?
I wouldn't say better than the Thin Mint.
That's a pretty high bar.
Yeah, those are hard to beat. May I try one? Dave, do you want to try one?
Colleen, I prepared for the interview by trying each of the cookies already.
Oh my.
And so, but go ahead and try one of the Adventurefuls, and I think you'll see.
Oh, my God.
See, a little bit of the Oreo in there, a little bit of a tart kind of thing.
Are you kidding me?
The squiggles on top.
This might beat out the Samoa for me.
Uh-oh. Ooh.
How is that even possible? Okay, so this is a new year for you guys. You're out doing cookie sales in person once again. What's that been like, that experience of selling cookies in person again?
It's very nice since we're going back to, you know, in person. It's a lot easier than doing virtual and stuff since the whole pandemic and everything. And I think a lot of girls will definitely be able to reach their goals this year, especially going out and being able to sell cookies, like in front of stores and stuff. And we all still keep our masks on everything, but pretty much everything is almost back to normal.
Wow.
Margot, is this your first time selling Girl Scout cookies?
No.
How long have you been doing it?
3 years.
3 years?
Yeah.
How old are you now?
I'm 8.
So you've been doing it since you were 5?
Yeah.
Wow, what a business. I guess you call her a business girl at this point, right?
I call her a prodigy if she's been doing it since the age of 5.
And she's a high roller. She has somebody who is, tell me about that. Somebody's matching your cookie sales? How'd you get that deal done?
I had somebody donate so I could go to camp.
Wow. That is so cool. So cookie sales help you go to camp. What else do cookie sales help Girl Scouts do?
Cookie sales, especially for my troop, they're helping us fund going to see Hamilton soon.
Ah.
And they're also helping me fund a little bit of my Silver Award, which is a project that takes a lot of hours. And you can do something for your community and you create a team and you, you know, get funding if it's needed. And it's just a really great project that you can use to help other people.
Wow.
And the skills that this program supports are listed right here on the box. So you've got goal setting, right? Mm-hmm. Decision making, money management, people skills, business ethics. What does this whole Girl Scout cookie program teach you about money management?
Well, a lot of times when you're at the beginning of selling and stuff, especially for me when I first started selling, I really didn't know how to manage money, how to sort it, how to really do anything with it. And I also didn't know how to like swipe a card and how to do stuff like that and interact and do sales and stuff. But going through cookie selling and everything, it's kind of teaching me how to handle money and how to do transactions, how to give change and how to use the Square app to do online transactions. And it's basically taught me how to be responsible with money and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And for you, was it the goal making, the decision making, the money management? What has it been for you, Allie?
I think it was the money management because I wanted to manage the money to fund for charity and stuff.
Fund charities?
We donate to medical workers and to the food pantry.
How does that make you feel when you're able to do that?
Makes me feel good. Makes me feel really good.
I bet. Margot, do you want to talk about your favorite thing about Girl Scouts?
My favorite thing about Girl Scouts is that sometimes we get to like go on like fun like field trips and stuff, and like we get to go to like the aquarium, horseback riding, and camp, and like a bunch of cool places.
So you rode a horse?
Yeah.
You did? What was that like? How big was the horse?
It was like, I'm not sure. It was like maybe this big.
That big?
Whoa. Yeah.
That's a pretty big horse.
Yeah. So, Vanessa, she works with Girl Scouts of America at large, and this year you're back selling cookies in person. How can the public support Girl Scouts and all of the wonderful, from charity to earning leadership awards and horseback riding, what are other ways the public can help them?
Yeah, so obviously we want you to buy as many cookies as you can to support the goals of our Girl Scouts in your area. But you also can donate to Girl Scouts of Western Washington. Donating actually helps us maintain our camp so that all these adventures can happen at camp. We've had Girl Scouts go to camp and learn how to row and become parts of varsity rowing teams. We've had Girl Scouts go to camp and learn survival skills and become parts of their local FEMA chapters.
Wow.
So if you can't buy cookies this year, or, you know, maybe cookies isn't necessarily something you necessarily eat all the time.
I don't understand why. These are delicious, by the way.
I'm definitely on the cookie train. Mm-hmm. However, if you want, you can also buy cookies and donate them to your local troops, your military troops, military service members, or you can donate to financial assistance, camp maintenance. These are all amazing opportunities they can't have without financial assistance.
And Sophia, you have more patches than anybody I've ever seen in any organization. So what are your goals?
My goals are to, one, earn more patches, because that's definitely something that I love to do. Patches kind of symbolize my achievements and everything that I've done throughout Girl Scouts. It's kind of like a memory book just in my vest. And I want to help people, and I want to earn more patches.
Well, after you've earned the patches, though, have you decided, have you planned the rest of your life after Girl Scouts?
I've planned some of it. I definitely have stuff planned. But, you know, there's always things that are going to come at you, and you can't plan for that. Like a pandemic, let's say. There are things that are going to get in the way of your plans. But I'm ready, and I can power through anything that comes at me, and I can persevere, and I can learn.
Anybody who wants to get their girl involved in Girl Scouts, become a brownie or a cadet like you. My 8-year-old just joined. She had her very first meeting Monday, and she's so excited to earn her very first badge. So I was wondering if you might be able to pass on some advice to anybody listening who wants to become a Girl Scout, and selfishly, to my little girl, too. Any advice?
One, anybody can become a Girl Scout, no matter your sexuality, your race, no matter what. Girl Scouts is open to anyone and is inclusive of everyone. And it's going to teach you so many good life skills. And I think just enjoy it, you know, enjoy what you're going through, like retain the skills and everything that you are taught and you are given, because they are going to help you in the real world in the future and stuff like safety or first aid or, you know, money management and stuff like that is going to help you in the real world. I think a lot of things in my life I would not have been able to do without Girl Scouts. And there's a lot of skills that I have now that I would not have had if I was not in Girl Scouts.
Great. Where can we find the cookies, girls?
Online, at booths.
All right. We're going to be looking for you guys, okay? Thank you for bringing along cookies and teaching us more about the Girl Scouts. It's so wonderful to meet you.
Alyssa, Sophia, Margot, and Vanessa, thanks all for coming on. 8:35, Seattle's Morning News. And now to Chris's continuing coverage of the ongoing concrete driver's strike. Projects, it turns out, are getting their concrete, but it's being delivered by non-Teamster drivers. And Chris, you looked into this and how far apart the sides are. What did you discover?
Well, I discovered they're a little bit closer than I think a lot of us expected, and also that we've found out a little bit more about what components and how far apart they are on certain issues. And we'll get to that in a minute, because I want to kind of take the temperature of the Teamsters, considering they are seeing other union members, not of their own union, not Teamsters, in their trucks this week, and in a move that's really seen as trying to weaken the morale of those out on strike. And it may have backfired.
We're ready to stay out as long as we need to. I mean, this group is nowhere close to breaking.
That's Local 174 spokesperson Jamie Fleming, who told me it really does hurt to see those trucks moving, especially with another union member behind the wheel.
It's tough seeing a union brother take your work while you're out on the street instead of having your back.
I get the feeling this group isn't really ready to back down. Fleming says their strike benefits are holding, and those that can are still donating to that fund. And she says contractors like Malcolm Drilling, which we focused on yesterday, that are using non-Teamsters drivers, are not helping the overall situation.
Any actions that anyone takes that makes the strike last longer, they're just shooting themselves in the foot.
Fleming says those contractors should be pointing their fingers at the concrete suppliers and not the union. And she says she knows everybody in the trades and in this industry is hurting, from those that have lost their jobs to the companies that are losing money or laying off people to their own members.
The amount of money that everyone is losing because of this strike is just, it's so over the top. And we're not that far apart economically, but they've got to move more than 15 cents.
And that 15 cents refers to what they have offered in the last mediation session that brings the raise up to 18% over 3 years. And what this really boils down to, obviously the wages are very important, but the top union priority is getting more money for the retiree medical plan. And Fleming says it shouldn't be a big ask.
So if you look at the, you know, the 15 cents they offered us in December, and then the 15 cents they added in mediation, 15 more cents and we'd be there. But they just won't do it. They are in lockstep saying they will not give our members the right to retire with dignity, which is just absolutely hideous.
Now, I interpreted that when she said that as 15 cents more and we'd be there as, okay, we're only 15 cents apart. Well, I've been talking back and forth to Jamie this morning to get a clarification on that, because we want to be really accurate on this. That's not the case. That 15 cents would get them to the line on the retiree medical benefit, but really they're still 45 cents apart in total on that package. So 15 cents made it seem a lot rosier than it was. I mean, and on, to be honest, I mean, you and I both were kind of taken aback when we heard her actually mention a number, because usually we don't get that kind of specific from the union, or certainly from the companies on this. And I have asked the companies if really, you know, to kind of verify where we are in terms of numbers apart. Haven't heard back yet, but I want to just be very clear to kind of deal with what exactly it is we're dealing with, because there's 15%, you know, 15 cents was part of the raise, 15 cents part of the medical benefits. It's, if you've never dealt with a union contract before, there's a lot of things that go into this. So I wanted to be pretty clear on that.
But I think for the people who whose jobs depend on the concrete and who are going without a strike fund because they're just not getting any work, this is really painful for them.
Yeah, I think, it certainly is.
I mean, I think it's probably in both sides' interest to each swallow their pride a little bit and get something done, because at some point, I just think it's, people are going to get desperate, and they are. They're just going to hire union workers who are willing to cross the line.
Yeah, and you, obviously we've heard from some people anonymously through the text line, through reaching out to me after these articles the last couple of days, that some people are already doing it. But the people that are kind of caught in this are some, you know, the garden variety lower subcontract guy who runs like a two or three person carpentry, you know, thing, and they're out doing these jobs, but they can't do their job until the concrete gets poured. So their jobs are, you know, they've lost their jobs, or they've laid off people that are, you know, so it's that ripple effect of the people down the line, the workers who have lost their jobs, that are really, have, you know, are really struggling right now. And I get it. I mean, the union understands that, but you're right. At some point, I mean, this is a regional impact for everybody involved here. And, you know, just, we're trying to do our best to nuance this and be fair to everybody. But the bottom line is, concrete is not moving like it has should in 3 months now.
I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM, or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.